You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this amazing, cool interview with a great new friend of mine all the way from Ireland, but right now he's in Los Angeles, Mr. Colin McIntyre. How are you, Colin?
I'm awesome, Nikki. Thanks very much for having me on the show, brother. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm just trying to recover. I was at Coachella. You know this. I was at Coachella with a bunch of my friends all weekend, walking around catching music, but I'm excited to interview you. And it's going to be a good time. So first of all, you coming from Ireland, and I want to ask this question because I've never been to Ireland. Tell me what Los Angeles is like for you, just coming from Ireland into this crazy city and circus of a music industry, Los Angeles.
Well, a couple of things. I was just talking to Sam about this before the show. The weather here is fantastic, especially at this time of year. So that's a given. California weather is always great. In terms of music, there's just so much more happening here.
Right.
Ireland's great, man. We have so many great exports of music. We've got U2, Van Morrison, Sinead O'Connor, you know, rest in peace, Sinead. We have all these great musicians, these great bands from Ireland. However, I think it's a very small pond. Whereas when you come to somewhere like LA and everybody's in the industry and they're doing their thing, it's much more exciting. And for someone like me who had never been to Los Angeles before 2019, coming here and thinking, wow, so there's a place where you can actually play music, write songs, and make a living from it. Like, that's wild to me. So that was a really big, when I had that realization, it's like, wow, you can actually make it as an artist out here. That is a game changer.
And you know what's crazy too? It's like, you know, I think a lot of it is because the industry thrives here. You have studios, you have musicians, you have producers, you have venues that all sprout or come here to kind of like create an atmosphere and environment like there really isn't anywhere else. I mean, there's, you know, Nashville's a great city. New York is a fantastic city too. New Orleans. But when it comes to music and studios and weather and lifestyle, it's hard to beat LA in, you know, just because of all those things. But I know you come from Ireland and there's a lot of rain and we had some rain this weekend. I didn't have it in the desert, but everybody was telling me that they were having it here. But you probably like shrug that off like it's nothing because you're back to sunshine in Los Angeles like almost instantaneously. Almost instantly.
Absolutely, and don't blame me. You know, people are saying you brought the Irish weather with you, but I've been here for a while. It wasn't me, guys. It wasn't me. And you're so right. You know, and you're so right about, you know, I went to Nashville. I did New Orleans. For me, I was really interested coming to the USA, like learning the history of rock and roll and the roots of rock music. And so I did the full thing, man. I went to New Orleans. I stood at the Mississippi River where the ships came in with a you know, first of all, they brought the slaves, and then in Congo Square, where, you know, they mixed these African beats with the French music at the time, and then that created jazz and how rock and roll came from that. And then, you know, it was a beautiful musical city. Nashville was amazing as well. Everything had its charm, but LA is where it's at for me, for sure.
It's funny. It's took me a long time. You and I have had coffee a couple times. And it took me a long time to kind of like realize that, but there's just so much art here and there's so much like good vibes and it's spread out. So it's like not congested into one small area. It's like LA is a big place and we spread out along, you know, the Southern California coast and beyond. And it's like the history that, you know, especially if you're a songwriter, this is like a very good songwriter's environment because you have history of all the Laurel Canyon songwriters. Then you have like, you know, people making records here that are historic records or in these studios that should be museums, but they're working studios. Have you kind of been enamored with just how everything is kind of tied together so kind of like seamlessly? Or do you find that it's just like so spread out because it's a little bit crazy? Because I know Ireland is not super big. It's like very much congested and like there's certain pockets that are more densely populated than others.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I think I remember a statistic. There's 3 times more people live in the state of New Jersey than live in the whole island of Ireland.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, yeah, just in the one state. So for sure. And to your point, it's like LA, everything's synchronized, but then it's so spread out because it's such a big city and it's so vast. And you've got West Hollywood, you got Hollywood, you got downtown, you've got all these different pockets. But to your point of how everything is synchronized here and how the industry all works, I mean, there's a real possibility that you can just come over here, play a couple of shows, and then you can be on festivals. And obviously it's not going to happen overnight, but I feel like that's the real advantage of being somewhere like this. Because if you're driven and you just really want it, I think environment's really important. And to find an environment where nothing's guaranteed, but at least there's opportunity. I found back in Ireland that, you know, doing tours and writing songs and playing concerts, it was all great. But if you look at anybody from Ireland, there's a few exceptions, but they're not the rule. They're the exception. Most people that made it from Ireland made it because they moved out of Ireland.
Right.
That's, you know, true. Like U2, Van Morrison, Sinead O'Connor, you know, they all moved. Snow Patrol, although half of the band are Scottish, 2 of them are from Northern Ireland. I think the only one that actually stayed was Hozier, and he's more of a recent artist. Right. But everybody else kind of moves out. And the Pogues, obviously, they stayed in Ireland. But it's really when you get
out. All great bands and artists that you just mentioned, by the way.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's the point where I think when they do their thing in Ireland, but when they bring it here to places like Los Angeles, and, you know, there's what I love is the industry's already set here. So if you're maybe already on your journey and you built momentum, a place like this can really, it can really rise you up.
Right.
You know what I mean by that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you a random question because this is what everybody asks when anybody goes to Ireland, is to have Guinness on tap because it tastes differently. Have you had Guinness on tap in the U.S. since you've been here?
Yes, on St. Patrick's Day, I had 1 pint of Guinness.
That's awesome. Did you taste the difference or did it taste the same?
No, it was good. I actually commented to my friend because, you know, I never drank Guinness outside of Ireland. It's like a rule. But it was St. Patrick's Day and we were having some dinner and I said, I'll try the Guinness. And it was actually really good. It was really good. The worst pint of Guinness I had was actually at Singapore Airport.
Wow.
Singapore Airport. And it's an airport and it was disgusting.
This is not Guinness.
It was not Guinness. I made a decision I would never drink Guinness outside Ireland again. But like I said, I did it actually in Los Angeles at St. Patrick's Day last month. And it was really good. Shout out to the bar in West Hollywood. I think it's called the Cat and the Fiddle.
Dude, I used to have my after parties at the Cat and Fiddle after our shows.
Right, really?
We used to play our concerts, and then we'd have after parties at the Cat and Fiddle. I miss those days because it's one of the coolest bars, and it's just got like a good vibe. So you chose well for St. Patrick's Day. That was a good spot.
They do a good pint of Guinness, so for sure.
So let's get to the music. So, like, what do you remember was the moment of zen for you that made you want to become a musician, or when you fell in love with music? Was it a song somebody played? Was it an album? Was it a music video? What was that moment of zen that made you say, I want to do this?
There was a movie that came out in Ireland. It's an Irish movie called The Commitments, and it came out in the early 90s.
Yep.
Have you seen the movie? Do you know it?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how big it is over here. In Ireland, it's like a real cult movie, and it's, as you know, it's for the audience who maybe don't know, it's about this band from Dublin, this group of musicians that put together a soul band.
Right.
And I had never heard soul music before. Now, I had listened to a lot of music up to then. Springsteen, the Eagles.
Right.
You know, I'd listen to all that because that was what my dad was into. You know, my mother and my father, that's what they were into. So we're a big musical family. But when the first time I saw that movie, man, and I heard that guy sing, his name's Andrew Strong. He had like the ginger ponytail, the long hair. Yep. And I heard that guy sing Mustang Sally. and then doing Try a Little Tenderness. I was like, oh my God, what is this music? Right. And this guy, he wasn't even like a, like a good looking guy, like the character himself, like he's kind of, you know, he's not your typical, you know, front man, but that was the whole point of the band. They had, they oozed talent, and you know, soul music comes from the heart. And
right.
So when I saw that movie, I was just like, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. And I could already sing because growing up, I had sang in choirs. I had sang in school. I wasn't very sporty. I wasn't like good at physical education. I liked to read, but I really excelled in music. And I did a listening test really early on, an ear test. And the choir teacher was like, okay, you've got a good ear. Let's hear you sing. And so she kind of mentored me from like, you know, yeah, like 7 years old, just to start singing beside the piano. So I could always sing, but it didn't really all come together till I saw that movie. And I was like, wow, like I want to play in a band. That's what I want to do.
And did you go to like a boarding school, or did you get church, or like how was the kind of music education system over there?
So in Ireland, I didn't go to a boarding school. In Ireland, you know, we're predominantly, we were at the time a predominantly Roman Catholic country. So a lot of the schools are Christian. And but even at that time, like all the schools are named after saints, you know, like St. Kieran's or St. Columns is like a local school.
That's nickname, dude.
And so I went to a school called St. Kieran's, but our music teacher, the choir teacher, she was into really contemporary stuff. So we were singing things like Heal the World, you know, by Michael Jackson, Elton John, all the live stuff. We were singing songs like that, even in choir. So they were the songs that I was really exposed to young age. I remember singing like Candle in the Wind for the first time, like as a child. I didn't even know. I was like, wow, this is a great song. And I really fell in love with lyrics then, because obviously when you're young, you have to learn the words.
Right.
So I'm learning all the words of these songs. And, you know, you've got Elton John and, you know, Bernie Taupe is the writer for all those songs. I didn't know that back then. I'm like, wow, these words in this song is, there was just something about it.
Well, you're doing iconic songs too. That makes you fall in love with the melodies and just the arrangements. Just like, I mean, that's awesome that you're doing. Not a lot of people sing those songs in choir. It's usually Christian hymns or, you know, classical pieces. So the fact that you're doing contemporary songs, that's really, really cool. And it makes you kind of fall in love with melodies and rock, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, shout out to my music teacher, because she's still a music teacher in that school. She was very young when she got that job. So, you know, I was over 20 years ago, and I met her maybe about a year before I came to LA. And I said to her, you know, I just want you to know that you changed my life in a lot of ways, and you really shaped me, because I'm now writing my own songs. I'm kind of traveling the world. I'm playing music. And that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't met you as a child. Yeah, and her decision to play those contemporary songs, because she was the musical director of that school, and they trusted her. And you know what she said to me? She's like, we're still doing that. Like, even when the kids come through now, we're still doing that 20 years on.
Well, you need to go back to the school and just be like, look what I'm doing now, because that may inspire kids that are taking her classes in the moment. You know what I mean? Just keep doing it, because you don't know where you're going to get inspiration from, or when you feel like it's not going to give you direction. And when you have those moments, not only for her as a teacher, it's going to be so cool for her to kind of like see where you are now as a musician, but also to have those kids learn and see that kind of like, oh, this could be my path too. It's going to have an impact just in the moment. You know what I mean? So something to think about. But when did you start playing guitar and start writing songs like really passionately and really like focused?
So, I'll take the second part first. I started writing songs seriously when I was a teenager. So, and what I mean by that is melody and lyrics.
Right.
Because I couldn't play guitar. Yeah, I could not play guitar. Okay. And so, yeah, as a teenager, I fronted a lot of, I actually got into punk rock. So this is like this really weird thing where in Belfast, the city where I'm from, we had a huge connection to punk rock. The whole north of Ireland did. So you have bands like the Stiff Little Fingers, the Undertones, Rudy, the Good Vibrations record label came out of Northern Ireland. And I don't know if you've seen that movie, Good Vibrations, but it's about the record label in Northern Ireland. And the reason that was important was because the historical context of Northern Ireland was that there was a war like two people ago. So during the, yeah, like one side fighting the other, but what brought the two sides together before the peace process was music. And the main type of music at that time was punk rock. So my dad listened to punk rock music as I was growing up. So when I became like a teenager, I totally rebelled. I had like the mohawk. I like the spiky hair. I'll send you a picture or something.
That's awesome. Yeah, please.
So I started fronting punk bands. And so I would take all that stuff from when I was a kid of singing in choir and write, like loving lyrics. And I would write these lyrics and I would work with guitar players. And they were kind of like angry punk rock songs. But as I developed as a teenager and I got better, I then started playing guitar probably around, I was probably about 18, 19 when I started playing. Right. But then I started a band where I was fronting the band, and we were more like a mixture of blues and ska and rock. It was like this fusion that we had. And I did that for 3 to 5 years. And that's where I really cut my teeth. That's where I learned how to, because I was kind of like what you do, you know, I was, you know, doing the email stuff. I was following up. I was fronting all the, you know, I was hooking up with the band members. I was writing the songs, you know, I was keeping everybody together. And it was a beautiful experience, but it just, you know, after a while, the kind of the wheels fell off a little bit, and it was kind of this transition.
Well, it's also like, it's like all bands are, they're not a democracy. And then when you end up doing more work than somebody else, or you see other people aren't doing as much work, you just can't be in a band with people like that. It's like, it's almost like a disaster when you all don't see the same vision, or you have somebody who's leading the way and people that are just like, yo, I'm down to follow you on this path. And, you know, that's a big part of why my band works. It's like, everybody's like, we're in this with you, steer us, you know, like, you know, take the wheel and make it happen. And it's a big responsibility. I think you've obviously learned that. Tell me what that transition was like when that band ended and you started getting more focused as a songwriter.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, it's kind of like breaking up with a girlfriend, right? Yes. It was in some ways worse. It was, yeah, for sure. But you know what? Everything in the right time, because what I did was then I started, I actually went and studied music. I actually went, because I left school and I started playing those punk rock bands. I left school. I didn't go to college the way we have university. We don't have college necessarily the way you guys have it.
Right.
We do have colleges, but it's not like we call them, like it's like university, if that kind of makes, does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. So I went back later. So at 23, 24, I go back to study music performance, music law, songwriting, and I do this higher national diploma. So I left that band, went, okay, I need to learn. There's things that I don't know that I want and I need to learn. And that's when I started taking it real. I always took it seriously, but that's when things started to shift.
Right.
I started studying jazz music and working with arrangements, working with compositions, working with, you know, because those kind of classes, they have contemporary musicians, but then they've got classically trained musicians, and they just throw you all in together. And then you're put into these bands with these people that maybe classically trained, but don't know how to improvise. And then you've got the other people that can completely improvise, but kind of can't play. And then you have to find your way through that.
Yes.
And that was amazing, man. Like, that was 2 years of my life. I studied my ass off. I got like 10 distinctions and like 2 merit. Like I aced that whole diploma. And then from then I came out at like 27. So it was 25, 26. I was like, okay, I'm going all in. Like all in. And that's when I just was like, okay, I'm going to make a go of this as a songwriter. And I went solo. You know, I started my own project, and that's just started writing songs. And then it was just anything with music in my life, like any songs that I could write, any chance to get into the studio, any gig that I could play. I had no thoughts about coming to America at this point. This was just about figuring out where I was and how it worked. You know,
well, you know what I loved about that too? It's like, what a lot of people don't realize when songwriters do that, they're not only the artists. They're the performer, they're the writer, they're the director, they're the producer. They're all these jobs that are kind of like, they're evaluated in film, but they're not evaluated in the same way in music. Because when I write a song, and when you write a song, you're writing the words, and then you're also figuring out the melody. So you're the composer and the writer. And then when you're singing the song, you are the performer, right? And you're also the band or the orchestra or the guitarist or whatever it is that is the medium to accompany yourself. So you're the accompanist too. And then when you're, you know, kind of like creating content and, you know, trying to understand how to maneuver that content, or either if it's a solo acoustic set, you're the director. You are creating the vibe. You are doing everything. And like, it's very underestimated how powerful a position and how much responsibility comes with it. But it's also super gratifying when people like your songs and they're like, yo, that song moved me. I mean, you get all the credit because there's no one else that is doing the work. You know what I mean? So it's daunting, and people like underestimate how daunting a task like just going out on your own and being an artist is. But to do all those roles, I know it's a transition from being in a band, because everything's kind of separated when, you know, you're in a band. Tell me what that did for you as an artist creatively. Did it shift the way you thought about music, the way you thought about branding, the way you thought about, you know, marketing or being just being creative? Like, how did it make you think about what you were doing creatively?
That's a great question. All great points. And I agree with everything that you said. When I was in a band, it's like you said, it's more like a democracy.
Right.
It was a double-edged sword because I found all this freedom that I hadn't had before.
Yes.
But then I feel like I underestimated how much other people brought to the table in terms of their style and their tones that maybe I didn't appreciate at that time. Like, you don't really see it. But then as a songwriter, I was like, well, okay, what do I want to say? Not just lyrically, but, you know, how do I want to sound and what do I want to stand for? And you'll know this as well as me. There's like the art of what we do, and then there's the business of what we do.
Right.
And the business of what we do, I had no clue about. Like zero, like how to market yourself, how to social, like social media, all of these things. And it became one of these things where I thought about, well, how do I want to, like, what do I want to say?
Right.
What do I want to stand for? And what do I want to do? And who inspires me? So I started thinking it from more of a outsider in, like, how do I want people to perceive this and how do I want it to sound? And you know what really shifted for me, man? And I don't know if this is true because it was just I was a teenager, but I used to be very self-conscious about making music that I thought other people would like.
Right.
And then when I go to college and I'm like, well, what do I like? And, you know, all that punk stuff, like, I loved it and there was a time for that. All that ska and all that rock and all that, like, it was part of me at the time.
Right.
But when I went back to my roots, it was like, what do I really love? Like, what really got me into this? And it was like we just talked about, being young, singing in those choirs, great lyrics, great melody, you know, like those are the songs that really moved me. And it didn't have to just necessarily be angry.
Right.
And I was like, well, it's about the emotion that those songs, that was like masterfully crafting these songs to invoke an emotion.
Yeah.
So I made a decision when I went solo. I was like, I'm going to make music that I would like to listen to.
Right.
Now. And I think that was a huge mindset shift for me, because then it became, because I actually remember some of my friends that knew me from younger that were like, you know, dude, this new music that you're making, like, I don't really vibe with it. And I remember thinking, I was a little bit, because no one likes to hear that, but I was like, no, but that's good, because I know what kind of stuff you're into and you're not into the same stuff that I'm into. So it would make, you can support me because I'm your friend, but it's probably a good thing that you're not in, because you're not the kind of audience that I'm like, because I wouldn't go to a show that you like.
Right.
You probably wouldn't go to a show that you're not going to go see Van Morrison play, or Gregory Porter, or one of these artists that I really, really love, the same way I'm not going to see Nine Inch Nails.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Not that there's anything wrong with Nine Inch Nails. It's just like, that's not, when I think about why I write music, that's not the music that first thing I would listen to on my playlist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you know what's also funny? I was actually just having this discussion with a couple of friends yesterday on the way back. It's like, for some reason, when it comes to musicians, all of your friends will tell you, you know what you should do? And it's like, I was bringing this up yesterday just as a joke. It's like, yo, I've studied music my whole life. And it's like, musicians that write they study music, like not just in the business hours, but in the wee hours of the night, and they're learning and playing and facilitating the craft in a way that no suggestion will ever merit that amount of work. And yet, for some reason, musicians or artists, I'll say artists, they get a lot of opinions, but nobody would ever go up to an accountant and be like, you know what you should be doing with your, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just the way it is. For some reason, people feel like they are maybe as talented, or they have a finger on the pulse as to how they can make you break. I mean, it's humorous to me that anybody has ever like talked to any artist like that. And it's like, you would never talk to a chef if you don't know how to cook. You would never go up to a chef and be like, you know what this needs? You know, you just wouldn't do that, because you expect that the cuisine and their knowledge of food is much more vast than your own. But artists that, you know, maybe people haven't heard of that are under the radar, people feel like, oh, I can approach this artist and maybe I can be the idea or the reason that makes them break. And it's like, no, that doesn't matter. So like music tastes, you know, especially with your friends or anybody, none of that really matters. All that matters is that you're being true to the craft of creating, telling a story, making observations through music, and putting it together in an artistic way that has some value to you. And if it has value to you, maybe it'll reach somebody else. And it doesn't matter who it is or what age they are or whatever. But all that matters is that creativity is at its purest form. And people underestimate that all the time. It drives me crazy. It's like, no, you'd never go up to a computer technician and be like, you know what you should be doing with your job? Instead of, I know you've been doing this for 20 years. You should try. It just wouldn't happen. You know what I mean? But so it's funny that your friend was like, yeah, I'm not really into that. It's like, that's not what it should be about. It should be about, hey, whatever you do, I support, like you said, as a friend. But, you know, it should be embraced, you know, just because you're being honest to the style of music that you want to create. And it's like, sure, there's bad music out there, but most of it is based on not using technique or not using education or not using, you know, songs that work as a basis to create new work. So, you know, don't ever sweat when somebody, you know, I know you don't, but I mean, like, don't ever worry if people do like it, don't like it. None of that matters. The success of it doesn't matter in the same way that the lack of success doesn't matter. All that matters is that you're creating and making art, because it's objective and subjective what the response is going to be, and it should not matter. So, like, you know what I mean? It's like, I've come to that place now in my life after so many people in the industry have told me, oh, you need to do this. And it's like, so many, you know, friends or people that I've met in the music world, like, oh yeah, you need to do this. But it's like, you know what? I've never gotten that suggestion from musicians that understand music, because they understand what you're doing as an artist. And it's like, I'll never tell you, Colm, you should really write a song about horses.
Yeah.
Like, I'll never tell you that, because that will be something that maybe you should come up with on your own, because that I'm trusting you're on the path of being an artist, and it's going to be important enough to write something that is in that direction if it happens. You know what I mean? So do you take people's suggestions with a grain of salt, or do any criticisms or suggestions kind of hit you a little bit? Like, because I mean, you're, I think, 30, 35, 33, something like that.
Oh, a little bit older than that. Okay, all right.
Well, you look young. You look well.
Thank you.
Still, it's like I remember feeling almost impressionable in my 30s. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, now I don't have that at all. It's like, I can make a mistake, and it's like, I can make a mistake, and it's no big deal. But because I've already done all the other stuff to prove myself, you know, it's like nobody can take that away from you once you do it, right?
Yeah, everything you said, I totally agree with that. The one thing I would say is that I'm open to feedback. I'm always open to it, like totally open to it. But there's something else for me that resonated with what you were saying, that when I thought about it, it was more that I was stretched out of my comfort zone, because I think what was keeping me in that place was, oh, I want to be cool. I want to be perceived to be being cool at the risk. When I was younger, I want to be a singer in a band and I want to be well known. And I had all that. Like, I wasn't famous, but I had, you know, people coming up, people recognize you, you play in that band. And it felt really cool. But then when I got older, I was like, is this what I want? And so the first thing that needed to happen was, because deep down I knew I wanted to write this kind of music, I wanted to write these style of songs, but I wasn't doing it because I was afraid that if I did it, I might get comments like that, you know, oh, this isn't what we're used to. And, you know, but people change. And so what happened was I was just like, well, I'm just going to do it. And then I'm just going to see how far I can take it.
Right.
And so, but it wasn't like zero to 100. It was like, okay, I'll write one song. I'll record, I'll put one song in, I'll make one music video. And then what happened was those people that were really in my life, they kind of just, because I started changing. When I changed how I thought and how I perceived things and my music changed as an artist, those people kind of just naturally drifted. There wasn't any like big, it wasn't like a big thing where people fell out. But what it did was it allowed this space for new people to come into my life.
Yep.
And I mean, think about it, man. We're sitting having a conversation. I'm in Hollywood right now having, I'm on radio with you right now. I'm a guy from, you know, a small city in the north of Ireland. I mean, I'm in Los Angeles playing music and writing songs. I mean, this didn't happen. It wasn't overnight, but it was the way I thought about it and being willing to take those risks and take those chances. And they don't all work out.
Right.
But when someone gives me feedback, I feel like it's kind of like a jacket. I try it on and see if it fits. I'm like, well, okay. Like maybe, does that feel comfortable? Nah, that's not really for me, but I'll try it on. But if it's said in a way that's condescending, I think it's how it's said rather than what's said. Because if someone comes up to me, because I know what I've done, I know how hard I've worked, doesn't mean that I'm better than anybody or any of that. I just know what I've done, right? And I can look back and say, I took a chance, I took these chances, and I did it. So if someone's going to come to me and say, I think you should do that, and I look at their lives, and I think, would I follow this guy's opinion? Would I follow his advice based on what I know about his life?
Right.
Like, is he taking chances? Like maybe he wants to write a book and he hasn't written a page in 10 years. Right. Am I going to take, because sometimes people will project their fears onto you and your action is a sign of their inaction.
Right.
And they don't like it. And so I think you gotta use discernment to see if people are maybe being a little bit salty as well. Because I've had that. And so I'm open, but I also keep myself a little bit guarded. So I want to meet everybody. I want to be like, I I'm open, like I'll take feedback. But in terms of criticism, it's like, unless you're grafting, unless you're someone doing what I'm doing, like,
right.
I'll listen to you.
And it's also like, you know, not to interrupt you, but it's, you know, if you've ever played a gig and let's say you're an original artist and somebody comes up to you and says, oh, do you know this Van Morrison song? Or like, it's like you would never go up to somebody else in their job and be like, I know you've been doing this accounting thing for a while, but can you be a fisherman for a day? Like you would just never do that. It's like, I don't know every song in the book. Like I actually practice these songs so I can present them. And I don't necessarily take requests, even on my own stuff. Like I've had audiences at festivals, like, requesting my own songs. And I'm like, no, it's not on the set list because I've cultivated a set list and I'm not a jukebox. Like that's not part of art. It's like, I want to be an artist. Like if I want to create something and get in the headspace to create that, whatever that is, it's not being a, hey, I'm a clown. I can be a jukebox. I can do whatever is going to fit your fancy. And that's what is so powerful about artists and the line that you have to draw between the audience and being on stage or being the artist, because you shouldn't cater. Like it's like your whole point is to be ahead of the curve in some way and lead people somewhere and take them somewhere. And if you're doing it right, maybe it'll offend people and maybe it'll make people fall in love with you at the same time. And that's okay. But people underestimate how crazy that is, you know, that role of being an artist. So I love that you just have the same outlook on all this stuff. And I want to play a song. What do you want to play us first from your catalog?
Okay, if we can go with Home. This was the first single that I released when I made that transition. So at this point, I've just left music college. I wanted to work with strings. So there's string arrangements on this. It was my first time working with strings, and this was my first single after college.
Cool. Here's Colin McIntyre with Home.
We should go. Had a family of my own and a home my wife decided on. I spent years in medical school learning to save lives until the bombs reduced it all in size and took from me my life, my old job and my firstborn child. Tell me, where should I go? And where can I call my home? Packed up our pictures and put them in a case. Then boarded a boat so we could leave our space. Headed to a foreign land. People would understand our situation. Panic and anxiety to cross along a narrow sea. Tell me, where would you go? Home is where the heart is, and I'm 1,000 miles away, and we don't know what we've got to do to get through to you. Arriving on foreign shores to get something a little bit more than this hand we've been dealt. Met with hostile disrespect, racism and better yet, like we chose this path. Now I think about my life, my old job and my firstborn child. Tell me, where would I go? Tell me, where would you go? And where would you call your home? Can somebody please tell us, where should we go? And where should we call our home?
There's something in the water in Ireland, because y'all know how to write a great song. That was a great song, dude. It's Barry Van Morrison-ish. I love the concept. I also have a song called Home. It has a lot of the same parallels. Tell me what the inspiration was behind the song when you were crafting it.
I read a newspaper article that there was a doctor from the Middle East that worked in a hospital. And what happened was, there was during the war, there was fighter jets that went over and bombed the hospital where he lived. And they were actually relocating to Northern Ireland, where I'm from. And so the story was that they had moved here, but someone had spray painted this like racist graffiti on their door. And so it was like immigrant side, or, whatever. It was just something racist. And I remember reading the article and I thought, imagine being a doctor and living in a country where you're saving people's lives and you're getting well paid. And, all of a sudden overnight, your work's been bombed, like your house has been bombed, one of your kids died. And then you come to you're like, okay, what are we going to do? Let's go to Ireland. Let's just go to Ireland, because they're going to take us in. And then you go to Ireland, and then Excuse me. They had went to London. I read they had went to England. They went to the UK. It wasn't they went to England. But I read that it was an article I read in Ireland. So they went to London and there was spray paint. So imagine you go to London. It's a completely different way of life. And then all of a sudden there's like racist graffiti spread. And I just thought, because as a songwriter, it made me feel something. And right. I was like, because it made me feel something, I wanted to write about it so right. that other people felt something.
Right. I love that. Yeah. I love that. When I wrote my song Home, it was about how I was like touring so much where it like felt like when I came back home, I didn't know where home was. Like it was like, is my home on the road or is my home here where I'm like stationary? And it's because, you know, like home is like in your head, you know, it's like you have to feel kind of where you're, you know, at peace the most. And sometimes it's on the road and sometimes it's at, you know, where you dwell. And sometimes the lines are blurred. So I love that there were some parallels in the story. I wanted to ask about the inspiration behind it because you had some of the same notions, but I knew it meant something different from the lyrics around it, you know, like in the verse and stuff, how you set it up.
Yeah. The way I always introduce the song is like, as people, we're always looking for somewhere that we belong.
Right.
You know, we're always looking for, it's exactly what you're saying. We're always looking for home. But I think that story, when I read it, it just resonated with me. So I wanted to use that idea, but then tell it in a story form. And that's actually a big part of my songwriting. A lot of songs that I write are stories. Because that really inspired me growing up. You know, I loved those kind of songs that were about, you know, maybe like Springsteen was the master of it. He used to write about, you know, the highway patrolman, or, you know, he used to write about these characters. I love that. I really, and Tom Waits is another great example. I love Tom Waits as well.
They're both great about that. They give you details of a part of society and then give you layers of their background to give you a picture of humanity and also the icon of whatever their position is in society. So yeah, I love that. I love that. It's like, it creates movies. You think about, you know, a character becoming a movie in 3 minutes, you know? So it's such a fascinating thing. You know, I don't know if you intended to have a lot of Van Morrison influence in that song, but it definitely has that singer-songwriter, like folky, but also retro, but also modern in how you presented it. Was Van Morrison an influence, like a heavy influence, or did you find more of the American songwriters were bigger influences for you?
It's interesting you bring Van Morrison up. I never listened to Van Morrison growing up. I got into him much, much later. But, you know, if you think about Van Morrison's influences, Van Morrison was influenced by the guys in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Like, that's who he listened to growing up. And so when I got into Van Morrison, I was like, wow. Because it wasn't so much just about him. If you think about the bands of the early 70s and the 80s, what was that 70s sound? It was like the Hammond organ. It was the acoustic guitar. It was, you had a little bit of electric in there, but it wasn't anything heavy. Right. And so at that time, I was really listening to like a lot of James Taylor, a lot of Van Morrison, a lot of that. Yeah, so he did inspire it. But even like, you know, piano players like Elton John, and, you know, there's a lot of piano in there as well. So it's, and you're right, because I remember my challenge was how to make this sound modern, even though it's a retro feel. And that's kind of my thing. I'm really inspired by retro music, but I do like modern day production. I do like it. I mean, not when things are compressed, like overly compressed and it sounds tinny, but right. I feel like there's a band from Australia. They're called the Teskey Brothers. Do you know them? The Teskey
Brothers? I love them. Yes.
They're amazing. They're amazing, you know, and they're doing soul music nowadays. Yep. And the production's quite modern, but it's like old sounding.
Right.
It's not what I do, but I love
because it sounds like a throwback. It sounds like Otis Redding, but it's like you're living it now. It's like such a great sound. I didn't know they were from Australia. That's so crazy.
They're from Australia, and I remember thinking like it just shows you how music works because they grew up, they're from like the outback. They're not even from like a big city. I think so, the two brothers. And so soul music found their way into their house growing up, and they just fell in love with it.
Well, it's like, I think what is cool about music in general is it pushes you to find new dimensions or new places or new sounds that aren't always representative of your hometown. And sometimes it's the opposite. Like, it's the sounds of your hometown that are missing in what you're listening, and then you become the hometown sound, like a Bruce Springsteen. You know what I mean? It's like, so you just never know. Let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
We'll go with that. So the song's called Week Old Town. I wrote this song when I was 21. This song is from my punk, the ska kind of blues band, but I only recorded it later. And this is the first time I worked with brass instruments as well. So this is like, I wanted to work with brass.
You said
brass.
Week Old Time?
Week Old Town, like town.
Week Old Town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's my Irish accent, bro.
Okay, all right. That's all right. Here's Week Old Town by Colin McIntyre.
Thank you.
So awesome, man. That was a great tune. Man, you know what? I'm going to give you a huge compliment because I don't say this about a lot of songwriters, but I love when songwriters can be eclectic and use different genres to tell their stories because it just makes them more versed in variety and you can hear their record collection in their songs. And that's what I love. I love doing that myself and I love seeing that in other songwriters. Paul Simon's a great example of somebody like that. Van Morrison, somebody like that. James Taylor does stuff like that. Like he'll do soul stuff, folk stuff, rock stuff, you know, blues stuff. And it's like all mixed because it's showing their record collection and the things that they gravitated towards. So, for some reason, I got a lot of Clash, like the Clash influence there, you know, but also some of the 90s ska bands, you know, like Real Big Fish, any of that stuff, Sublime. So tell me what made you kind of like you're going in this direction with your band and what made you go in the same direction doing it solo?
So I just, because when I made that record, so I made the home EP and then the album was called Redemption. And that was the last track on Redemption because it felt like, because it was never recorded properly when I was with my band. We had done variations, but it was never done properly. And that was the first song I wrote even before I started the band. Like that was the song that we played and we played and we played it. And I was like, you know what? Like that song's a part of me. And I felt like by recording it and putting it last on the record, I was closing a chapter. I just felt like I was closing a chapter in my life as a songwriter and then moving on. So that's why I decided to record it like that. It originally didn't have brass and we needed one more song we didn't need it, but I wanted one more song on the record to really tie it all off. And I went with that. And it was so weird, man, because that was the song that actually, you know, it got a lot of plays in Brazil. It got a lot of plays in like Canada, like just these random places that listened to it and played it. And I just wasn't expecting anything to come of it, you know? And what you say about being eclectic, sometimes I don't know if that's a help or a hindrance. All I can say is as an artist, that's what I feel. And when I do a record, I'm always listening to new things. And I'm like, well, I want to do this. I want to do this style. And, you know, someone like an artist like Tom Waits, for example, if you listen to Tom Waits' first record, Closing Time, right to like when he did later albums like Mule Variations or even Rain Dogs. Rain Dogs is a great example. He started bringing in like different percussive instruments because he was really influenced by like Captain Beefheart and all these people that were using those instruments. And so it was still his voice, but his music changed. Yep. The story stayed the same. Now, he wasn't a massive influence on me in terms of musical style, but as a creative, he had a huge influence on me. Like people that do that progress their music because they're open to learning something. You're listening to something. You want to say something new. When I hear an artist like that, I'm automatically drawn in.
Yes, I'm the same way. And I find my favorite songwriters are like Peter Gabriel, Paul Simon, Paul McCartney. They're all doing that. They're using reggae. They're using funk. They're using rock. They're using blues. They're using electronic. They're doing folk. They're doing whatever it is that suits their fancy to tell their story in the album concept or, you know, telling a story in a song, a simple song that, you know, it speaks volumes as to what they're listening to and what they're inspired by. And I love that. Sting is another great example. Like
Sting, yeah. You know, the Beatles, Paul McCartney, you know, listen to Blackbird. It was like based on a classical piece that he really loved. And
yeah, you know, those are my favorite songwriters. So a tip of my hat to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So it's important. You don't see a lot of songwriters. A lot of songwriters like to stay in one genre to make it signature. But I'm like, yo, that's the one thing that I think is limiting in music is when you have the word genre attached to it. And I think great music is just great music. And when you define it by a genre, you almost lessen how great it can be and its impact because you're just trying to define it. And great art is the best when it's not defined. You know what I mean? It's like it stands the test of time. It's ahead of the curve and it's just forcing you to be influenced by it, whether you like it or not, you know? So don't be afraid of stepping out and doing things that, you know, people won't expect you to do. That's our role as artists and songwriters. So let's play another song. What are you going to play next?
All right, so this track's called American Dream. Do you want to know a little bit about it? Yeah, sure. So this was the last record that I released. I only released this last year, and I literally spent 3 months traveling around the United States asking people if they believed the American Dream still existed.
Wow.
Yeah, because, man, you know what? Like, just something I want to say. Irish people love America, like, in general. We love it. You know why? Because a lot of us emigrated from Ireland during the famine to come here. Yep. We've got, like, close relations. And, you know, for a lot of the world, they look up to America. I mean, I did as a child. And, you know, I don't want to get political on the show. I'm not a political person. I would just say that it's kind of sad to see the world at the minute. And it kind of bothers me a little bit the way that, you know, it seems so divisive.
Right.
And so this song, the story behind it was, I went around everybody and said, hey, do you believe the American Dream still exists? Whether it was a cab driver to a person cleaning the streets to a CEO, anyone I can meet, hey, ever have a drink? What do you think about the American Dream? Do you think it still exists?
Right.
And musically, I was spending a lot of time in Nashville, and I was listening to a lot of the Eagles, and, you know, spend time in New Orleans. And so with this record, I kind of went a little bit to that sound. I wasn't really looking to, but then I was using old Marshall, kind of 70s Marshall stack amps. And so there's no brass, there's no strings on this. It's just guitar. And I just wanted to write a song about hope and the American dream, you know?
That's awesome. Here's the American Dream by Colin McIntyre.
It's
all around you, it's inside. And you are one with me. Feel the souls of the departed. They're here tonight, and they're singing.
Beautiful and poignant song, man. I think you got your Springsteen tune in your catalog. There it is, man. Where can people find you if they want to find you online and want to learn about your music, find out about shows, where you'll be around the world, we should say?
Yeah. Check me out on Instagram, Colin McIntyre at Instagram, Colin McIntyre on Facebook.
And spell it out for them just because people are dumb.
Yeah, so Colmmcintyre.
Colin, we're going to make some music together. We're going to hang. I know you're going to leave town, but you're going to come back and forth. We're going to do some shows when you come back too. But it's such a pleasure to cross paths with you. We met a couple of months ago at Hotel Cafe. I wish you nothing but the best. We're going to have to make some music and co-write some songs together. But in the meantime, thanks for sharing your music and your story with Wake Up Hollywood. You have an unlimited open door to come back whenever you want to showcase and share new music, okay?
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Sam, thank you so much for all the support, guys. Have an amazing rest of your night, and God bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, man. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Colm, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace, love, and take care.
Peace.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.